You are now in tune with the Talking Reggae Podcast. As always, I am Jay of Street Level Uprising, coming to you from, once again, my makeshift area in the kitchen because my studio AC is still down, but hopefully will be repaired soon. In the meantime, you got me in the kitchen with Dane of Lion Heights. Dane, how you doing, man?
Blessed love, man. I'm great. I'm doing good, man. Feeling good.
Good, man. We should be feeling good. You guys have a brand new album out called False Reality. You got a tour coming up, and we're going to get into all that today, but I always start in the same place with everyone I speak with about reggae, which is, give me your earliest impressions, your earliest memories of hearing reggae music and how you felt.
Oh, dude, I know exactly when it was. When I was about 15, I would say I was really into punk rock. I was like a hardcore punk rocker. I had half my hair dyed, half and half colors. I wore, like, you know, the patches everywhere, the three belts and all the silliness. And so Bad Brains was like my favorite band. That was my band that really got me into the music, and listening to HR, you know, even his own personal stuff, just like the Rasta message and the real, I don't know, the positivity and all of that was just so fresh to me. Because, you know, punk can kind of be it's always against something. It's kind of, it's not necessarily negative, but it's always coming from, like, you know, an angsty point of view. Bad Brains did it different, where they were talking about PMA and all the, you know, mind over matter and all these things. So that, to me, that was so illuminating. And from then on, I liked the reggae music that they were making more than the punk music. And I just started to go from there. Like, Burning Spear was one of my very early artists that I liked. Because at the time, I didn't really understand Bob Marley. I thought Bob Marley was like mainstream. And so since I was kind of anti-mainstream, I didn't want to even go to the Bob route yet. So I listened to Burning Spear and Mikey Dread, and I liked Peter Tosh and like everybody else. And then finally I came around to Bob Marley, and I realized, I was like, oh, wow, I've been missing out this whole time, you know, that Bob is really, you know, the king of reggae for a reason. So that was it, like from punk rock to reggae music. And then I've been solid reggae music since then, you know. 15 years, I would say.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I love Bad Brains. I had a great, a lot of people come to reggae through punk. Mm-hmm. I kind of went backwards. I kind of got into punk through reggae because I forget which Clash tune, but I heard one of their reggae tunes and I was like, Oh, that's cool. And started listening to the Clash. And then like, I dig this other stuff too. And then I was telling someone how I was starting to get into punk, and they said, well, you need to check out Bad Brains. And I went, okay, I'll check out Bad Brains, and didn't know Bad Brains also played reggae. So it was almost, there was like this full circle thing between the Clash and Bad Brains. And I still think they're one of the best. I think they're a seriously, seriously underrated band.
Oh yeah. They're kind of the kings of the underground, I would say. Like, and HR has always been like an underground guy. Like, they just never really, but I mean, it's not really the place of, I've said this about reggae music in general too. Like, reggae is an underground movement. It's like it's a people's movement, and the powers that be and the wicked them will never allow it to be as mainstream and pervasive as, you know, it could be because of the potential it has to wake people up. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with punk. So it's always going to be an underground movement, you know, and for us to be the truth seekers, we're gonna find it, you know. Everyone else is content listening to the radio, but we had to find it.
Well, you know, people who get into reggae music are usually searching for something that they're not getting from one of those more mainstream. There's you know, they're not looking for, whether it's they're looking for something deeper meaning or a deeper bass feeling, or, you know, whatever it is. It just seems like we're all seeking something deeper than,
totally,
you know, some of the more superficial things that you might see.
For sure.
I love, like I'm a huge Fishbone fan too. So for me growing up, it was like, those were the bands that I was into. And when I found Bad Brains, it was like, ooh, like, here's another Fishbone for me, another band that I didn't know about, that a lot of people don't know about, that I'm finding something beautiful in, you know?
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Yeah. And it's funny because I was talking to a friend today about HR, because they actually, fingers crossed, I hope everything works out, they called me for a gig. to play bass for HR from Bad Brains. So I'm kind of like, wow, talk about full circle. But we were talking about him and just about how he's kind of like one of the godfathers of American reggae music, or like American Rastafari, you know, being like a influential person to, cause I mean, how many, I've heard a bunch of people say that like they got into reggae music through Bad Brains or through these guys, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like, yeah, very influential to have woken so many people up or started this whole thing. So, and he was, they were around like in when reggae music was blooming and, you know, late 70s, early 80s, like that was like the heyday. So anyway, it's just cool to think about that.
Yeah. And there's so many bands that you have to wonder about that. Like I just mentioned Fishbone, where it's like, there's a band that's hugely influential on so many other bands, but it's like, you wonder why they didn't attain the same heights as so many of the bands that they influenced. And, you know, I've spent my whole life trying to be a megaphone for people like Bad Brains and Fishbone, and like tell it, oh, if you like these bands, you got to go back and check this out. You know, there's the huge amount of Sublime fans, and it's like, there were things that it's like, that's great, but there were also things that came before Sublime. It's like, you got to go back to Fishbone, you got to check out Bad Brains, but all great bands. They're underdogs. You're always pulling for them. I'm still, you know, so I'm always out there pulling for them. When you first got into reggae through Bad Brains, were you already a musician? Were you already playing an instrument back then?
I think I had just bought a bass. Like I had just recently, because I got my bass in like eighth grade, because at that point I really liked Blink-182 and I liked the bass player, Mark Hoppus. I was like, I think that's what I want to try out. I think, you know, that attracts me. So then I was, you know, doing the punk rock bass playing and stuff like that. And then eventually through Bad Brains, fell in love with like heavy bass, syncopated bass, like just totally went the opposite direction with the tone. Cause the punk tone to me is like, I don't even like playing like that no more. I don't like the way the bass sounds, but the reggae heaviness, you know, that like consumed me. So then, yeah, I like went heavy into dub. You know, I think a lot of people, when they first kind of get into the music, they like the psychedelic aspect of dub. So I definitely went down that hole for a while. But yeah, it was kind of all happening at the same time. I think it was just I was young, I was absorbing a bunch of music at the same time while trying to figure out who I am. Mm. So, and that slowly formed into, I'm a bass player.
Yeah.
That like is my calling.
Yeah. Being into punk first, basically while you were playing bass, did you start off playing with a pick?
I don't think I did. I don't remember ever really doing that. I don't think I ever liked playing with a pick, because I tried to play guitar, you know, at first, just like friends' guitars, and I hated it. I just hated the holding of the pick and the crushing of my fingers. I hated that.
Yeah, you were meant for bass. What are you gonna do?
I was made. Yeah, I got big hands. I was meant to do this. Like.
I've got a running joke about bass players who play with a pick. I don't really have anything against them. It's just, as long as I've been a musician, I've just joked with bass players who use a pick and say like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Well, it does have it has a tone. It's like really bright and punchy. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess that's okay. There was a time when like I was playing in this hardcore band. I was fine live, but when they brought me to the studio and I couldn't play with the pick, I just told the guitar player, I was like, just you play the bass lines, because you're already playing the guitar lines. Mm-hmm. You can just match the bass lines to be perfectly with the pick action. Right. I wasn't very invested in the band anyway. I was just like, I don't care. You do it. Just because I couldn't play. I didn't have the tone that they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does have its own tone. And I do understand there's some styles of music that benefit from it. I just like giving them a hard time because it's fun.
It is fun. I mean, whatever.
I always said, if Frankie Bello of Anthrax can play with his fingers, every bass player can play with his fingers, because he's playing super heavy music and he didn't use a pick. But no.
And fast.
I just, yeah, and fast. Yeah. No, I just like to mess with him. So So you started off like joining bands like that and all that. How soon in your development were you really playing with, were you playing with one band? Did you try playing with a bunch of different bands? Like how did that get rolling for you playing with other musicians?
I've always been kind of like a self-reliant mentality person. You know, I like, if I want to do something, I'm more likely to start it myself than to join somebody else, like to follow somebody else. So in high school, I had a band called Brains for Dinner, which I know the name doesn't really make a lot of sense. Again, this was the transition from punk to reggae.
It's a great name for a punk band. It really is.
It was. I mean, yeah. it was from the Misfits song Brain Eaters. And we were, you know, we liked zombies and horror movies and stuff at the time. So we were like, let's be the Brain Eaters. It's a great name. But like, you know, after having rehearsal every week, we started to just play reggae music, and then we just never changed the name. But we rocked that band for damn near 10 years. I mean, like we played that band until I went to college from high school into like till the end of college. And it was really popular in Houston, man. We used to pack out places. We used to open for tons of artists. But I always just think of that as like my reggae school, because even when I listen back to it, it's not really like following the culture as much as I think about it now. So, I mean, it was a good pushing off place, and it was a great way to get into it and start, you know, building my community. But I would say it wasn't until I moved to Chicago and started playing with Jamaicans. That was the real reggae school where I realized, I was like, oh, wow, I don't even know half of this. Like, there's so much to know. Mm-hmm. And that's where Lion Heights started. Like, that's where we met each other and started cutting our teeth and then developed what we have now, you know?
Yeah. And you guys have a really cool origin, because it's like, I'm always fascinated by bands that start off in one place and then move together as a mm-hmm. band to go somewhere else. So how long after Lion Heights started, how long were you in Chicago until you decided to move to Austin, and why did you decide to move to Austin?
Well, I'll give you a couple of years before we started the band, because Jeremy, James, and me, which is guitar, keys, and bass, we went to school together. I started a club because I didn't have no friends. And it was the Reggae Music Club, basically Roots Rockers Club. I got the school to sponsor it and give me a rehearsal space, you know? And then I put flyers up all over the school with Mikey Dread on it. That's basically saying, if you know, you know, meet me at the rehearsal room, you know? And
if you know who this is, be at this spot at 9 p.m. Yeah.
Basically. And it was every Friday. So those guys showed up, and they kept showing up, and like, we just kept learning tunes, and we were just learning covers and just playing whatever. And eventually we found singers, and we would back artists, and we were doing all that. And then, you know, from developing that and doing that in Chicago for a while, we kind of got tired of, you know, people not respecting us, or like singers, for instance, would take half the pay the band half the money and take the other half for themselves and stuff like that. Just like shady business stuff that we were just like, man, you guys are taking advantage of us. So we were like, all right, let's just write our own lyrics and start singing ourselves. Let's just start doing it. So we don't even need singers anymore. We can do it. And Jeremy, you know, he was a choir boy growing up. So he already had a good voice, and he was always doing backgrounds. So we were just like, all right, you start doing that. You start singing. And I always like, I loved the real ragamuffin reggae, like Buju Banton and Sizzla. And I loved, like, you know, mm-hmm. Terra Fabulous and artists like that. So to me, I was like, I would love to chat patois and sing some lyrics, you know? Yeah. And so that's just how it started. Pennies in My Pocket was our first tune. I think that released 2013. So it just came out of like frustration with what we didn't like coming from playing music. And then we were like, we could do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then just now we have to figure out how to play and sing at the same time. That's really hard, man. Playing bass and singing at the same time. Yeah. It took me a long time.
Yeah. I can't imagine, man. Like, so I kind of started singing the same way, because it was like, we kept going through singers, and eventually it was like, you know, and this is several bands ago in my youth. And it was like, they're just like, why don't you just sing? And it's like the same thing. It's like, well, now I got to learn how to like do that and play
guitar. Now you got
to
figure it out.
Yeah, but for bass, it's like I always say, bass is the best instrument, man. It's so much fun to play. But I couldn't do what I do and be a bass player because there's no way I could sing lead and play the bass. Not with 100 years of practice. It's one thing for me to play guitar, to play chords and stuff like that. But I don't think I could play bass lines and sing leads. So I can't even imagine what bass players go through when learning to sing and play your instrument at the same time, man.
You know who inspired me? Did because you were in the Midwest for a bit. So do you ever see Gizeh?
No.
Okay, they were a Chicago band, a wild hair like staple, and the main guy's name is Rocket, and he's like a player from the 80s, but he was so smooth, man. He had the smoothest voice, and he never made mistakes. Like, at least I couldn't hear him.
Yeah.
And he played bass and just sang so smooth. And when I saw him do that, I was like, all right, it's possible. It can be done. You know, I have a different style than him, but like,
yeah,
when I saw him for the first time, because again, it was around that same time of like us starting Lion Heights, and we're in Chicago and we're like bright eyed boys, like, you know, seeing all these, you know, Jamaican legends play for the first time in Chicago. And yeah, that made a big impact on me, you know, like Chicago definitely made us who we are for sure. You know, I don't think if I had stayed in Houston growing up, that would have happened for me just because the culture in Chicago was popping at the time. But you asked me, I didn't finish the question. You asked me, I think, why did we leave?
Yeah. Yeah.
And man, at the same time, while I do love that city and it made us, it's a hard place to live. You know, it's hard to make money. It feels like it was kind of like it's like you have to grow up there and know everybody to like get those jobs that you want to get.
Hmm.
And as like a fresh person, we're not even from there, it seemed like I had to pay my dues over and over and over and over again in order just to get like, even just to play at the Wild Hare, which is the reggae club. You know what I'm saying? Like stuff like that. It just felt like there were so many blockades in Chicago just because it's an old town. It's an old music town. There's a lot of history and people before you. And not to mention, we got robbed a bunch of times. Like we went on our first tour, and they robbed our apartment and stole all of our computers, stole our first album, same situation. And we had to restart the album because they stole all of our hard drives.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So it was like in a culmination of that, having like bed bugs, you know, all those big city problems, you know? Yeah. So I just reached my limit and I was like, man, I don't think I could do this anymore, guys. I need to go back to Texas where people are actually nice. And, you know, I can afford my rent, and, I just think that that's the move. And so Jeremy and James weren't convinced at first, but we had visited Austin on a tour, and, you know, we went swimming and we had a great time. And so they wrapped their heads around it, and they're like, okay. And they like country music and stuff like that too. So they were like, okay, it could be kind of fun. And so it took like a full year from me moving and them to follow, you know, and then for us to find a place to live and jobs. And, you know, it's hard to say if that was a good choice in the career of the band, because it really took us like 3 years to find a new drummer, get back in the shape, and then also pay our dues here in Austin to actually start playing. Cause they don't just let you play. You have to, it takes a while.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but like for quality of life, it was the right choice, because now I've built my studio and I have, you know, I have a van and a car, which in Chicago, it's like, it's hard just to have a car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let alone have like another vehicle. So I think, you know, it did definitely take some time out of us, out of our band, where maybe we would have been. Maybe because I look at like Ayaterra, for instance, they started right around the time we did, and look at Ayaterra. They're like, they're huge, you know? So I always think about like, man, if I had that extra time, what would it have done?
But no, man, no, things go as they're supposed to, man.
Everything in its time,
you know, everything in its time. So I never sweat stuff like that, man. I have those same things where should I have done this? Should I have done that? It's like easy. You know, everything I've ever done has led me to this moment. and I'm all right. So it's got to be all right. You know, man, the weather alone in Chicago is enough to drive you south. I mean, I didn't even mention that. Yeah. That's what finally brought us back to Florida was like, I was out in Lawrence for a really long time and I love Lawrence. I love the town. I made so many friends there and I miss it. I miss the town so much, but those winters just started to just grind on you. And after a while, it's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't spend 6 months of my year indoors all the time. Like, so then weather enough would be enough, you know, say, let's go to Texas.
The weather, it kind of puts you in like a depression sometimes to be inside for so long. And, you know, and then just like the culture of drinking is very heavy too in the winter places. When people don't have much else to do. So I don't know. There was multiple things that weren't aligning, but yeah, like you said, like I miss Chicago too sometimes. And I loved Lawrence. I thought Lawrence was such a cool town.
Yeah.
It's a fun spot.
It really is, man. It's a great place.
We can, now that we're living in the South, we can just tour to the Midwest when it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Lawrence too. You know, one of the problems Lawrence is a lot like Austin, just on a smaller scale. Everyone in Lawrence is a musician. There's more bands that you can, you know, that you can even keep up with. So it's like, it's like a scaled down version of Austin. There used to be a stat, and I don't know if it's still true, but the stat was, you know, the only place in the world that had more music venues per capita than Lawrence was Austin. So it was Lawrence was like the little brother, you know, of Austin thing. It's really a great town. But like Austin, the competition's fierce because there's always other bands doing their thing. And, it was the same thing when I first moved there. It was like, you really got to pay your dues, which, I mean, you probably should, because, you know, so many people think that they can just walk in off the streets and it's like, hey, look what I can do. And it's like, yeah, man, like there's, you know, 50 other bands in this town that can do that.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes you work. It makes you stay humble and it makes you work to bring your craft to another level, which is I'm sure what you guys have done.
Yeah, I think that for sure, us having to cut our teeth for a long time and go to reggae school and do all these things, you know, it has helped us to be really tight with each other. And it's been me, Jeremy, and James this entire time. So it's like, we've been playing together for over 10 years. And I mean, we've played hundreds of shows together. So we do have like this type of telepathy sometimes, which is really nice that we got because of having to do all this work. But, you know, I can't say it doesn't burn you out, and playing a bunch of empty rooms for years at a time definitely wears you down. But that's why I'm really grateful for what's happening right now with the album release. And we just did a tour with Arise Roots. And, you know, playing packed rooms and having people appreciate you and buy your merch and all, it's just like giving me so much life and just like renewing me. Cause we've been struggling for a long time, like to gain traction. And it's so irritating to have booking agents tell you that they like your music, but they don't want to work with you because your Instagram numbers aren't high enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man,
you know, it's funny, man. I was talking about this the other day with someone. It's like today's music business, it's kind of a double-edged sword thing going on, because on the one hand, you don't need to rely on major labels and stuff. You can do your own thing. You can build your own fan base in a way that you couldn't pre-internet. So that's great. But there also used to be people who would take chances on bands and say, you know what? You guys are really good. I'm going to bring you along and put you on with this. Where now it's like, even the major labels, like you have to have your numbers before anyone's going to do anything for you. And it's very difficult. Like you said, years of struggle, man, we've been in the same boat as you guys, you know, just a different part of the country where it's just, you know, it's all struggle. And you're not looking for a handout, but you're hoping at some point somebody might be like, you know what? I really like you guys. I think you have a lot of potential. Let's do something together. And those things just don't seem to happen as much anymore.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it takes. I mean, I see bands getting those opportunities and I wonder, you know, what it took for them, or maybe, you know, they just were able to build up their following and then it was good enough for the label or whatever. But to me, it's kind of like a chicken before the egg type of situation where if I have my following and I have, let's say, 50,000 followers already, why do I need the booking agent, or why do I need the label, or, you know, I'm already selling tickets. I'm selling merch. I don't need you guys.
Yeah.
But now you want to work with me.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And that's my philosophy too, is like, well, if I'm at that level, like, I'm not going to use you. Like, the time to build the relationship is now, and then you profit from it later. You don't want to build the relationship, then I'm not going to need you at that point.
Yeah. So I don't really know. We're totally playing it by ear with this thing. But what I hope to do, at least for looking into the future for Lion Heights, you know, we're going to do this May run, which is all solo, but I'd like to start linking up with more of these bands coming from the West Coast and open for them, and just start getting out there to their crowd. Cause I don't think that the American reggae audience is really even hip to us yet. Like, I don't think we've got pockets of people, but yeah, trying to get out there to like the masses of the listenership in reggae in America. I that's what I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Where is everyone listening to their music? Who's the tastemaker, you know?
Yeah. It's true. A lot of it is like that. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't really been in the California reggae world for very long. Like, I didn't really listen to those bands very much. So now I'm kind of having to do my homework and figure out who is who, and they've been around for like 10 plus years too. So it's like I gotta, you know, do some of that homework.
Yeah, I'm the same way, man. I didn't grow up on that. And, you know, one of the things I felt about starting this podcast a couple of years ago was it would help me to learn about, because I'm an old school cat. And so I kind of wanted to do the crossover thing where I'm introducing new schoolers to the old school. And then I'm learning from them about, you know, what's going on today. So I'm only about 3-4 years deep in my education about most of these American reggae bands. And it's interesting. And then you also have the added thing of, okay, like there's this American reggae scene, but a lot of these bands sound nothing like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you're trying to find, where can I fit in here? What bands should I be trying to work with? Because honestly, I don't have much in common with a lot of the Cali reggae bands. We come from different places. We sing about different things. Our sound is a little different. So there's also that, where do you fit in the reggae scene?
Totally. So what we're trying to do is, we're from Texas, right? Since we've always felt like outcasts in the exact sense that what you're saying is like, the Cali guys that come through and tour through, like, they haven't really worked with us very much. So I don't really feel like we're a part of that movement, or we're like, they don't group us with those bands most of the time. And then like the real Jamaicans and the classic guys, like, they don't really like group us into that group either, because that's the Jamaican sound. That's their sound. So where's Lion Heights? Where do we fit? And so what I want to do is, we're branding ourselves as outlaw reggae. Because we're outliers from these two sides, and we're also from Texas. So we're outlaws, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And the way I coined that term is, Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings back in the 70s, they wanted to leave Nashville and the Nashville country sound because it was watered down. It wasn't what they wanted. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't representing them. So they came back to Texas and they made outlaw country. So in the same regard, Lion Heights went back to Texas and we did outlaw reggae, you know?
Yeah, which, man, following in Willie's footsteps. Go get it.
Yeah, which is like basically hearkening back to the roots of reggae. You know, we want to play a Jamaican style, but we're boys from Texas. So like, we're going to sing about what we know about and do the things that we do. So
yeah. No, I feel you, man. I think my band and your band has a lot in common with the way that we view a lot of these things. You know, for us, you know, I call it, it's underdog reggae. It's the same type of principle where it's like, because we're in this movement, but we're not, it's just different. And it's tough. Like, what we do is 100% conscious. So it's, that's a tough niche to fall into and try to fall in with a lot of these, you know, the modern reggae bands who maybe came from the Sublime Tree or something like that, you know, and these bands are all great. I mean, that's the cool thing about it is, you know, all of these different, you know, on the reggae spectrum in the US, like all of these bands are wonderful, but trying to find your place and trying to find other bands to kind of unite with and play with is not always an easy thing, because not every band, you know, two bands are going to fit together and make a good bill. Yeah.
We play a lot of shows with our friends, from Houston called Dem Roots Music. Check them out. I produced their last album, or their first album. So Jeremy, the keyboard player, and me, we actually play on the whole record. So it's like kind of half Lion Heights, half Dem Roots, you know?
Nice.
But at the time, they didn't have a full band and they had music. And so that's why we filled in the gaps. But since then, now they have their people that are like, you know, that's the band. So I'm working on their new album and it's their new band all in the studio playing live. And it is roots, man. It is rootsy. I'm really excited to release that record. But so that's what, like, you know, out of Texas, I think it's Lion Heights and Dem Roots. Like, we're trying to, you know, unite. And of course there's a lot of other artists that are really amazing here too.
Sure.
But I think as far as like that sound that you're saying, where the sounds really mesh together.
Yeah. Like, it's tough for us, like with what we do lyrically, like to play with like a full on party band is a weird,
it's weird, right?
It's kind of a weird dichotomy that you're going to get at a show. Like if we're playing with a straight party band or something like that. So yeah, you know, you do need to find a band that's similar, similar to what you do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the feeling and in what you're trying to convey and like, yeah. I see what you're saying with the party band thing. Cause it's funny, like both of our bands, like everyone likes to party. Like we like to party,
yeah, but
like what my party is might not be your party. You know what I'm saying? But on stage, the persona and what I want to bring to people is not that of let's drink and get crazy. Like I want to be mindful and thoughtful and uplifting and like, yeah, I want to tell you to dance and party.
Sure.
And I'm going to tell you to do that, but I'm not singing about taking shots.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I'm not singing about that. So, and that is a big difference with like, yeah, there's some of these other groups that they definitely sing about things that I don't align with. So that's kind of, why I've never moved into that direction. Without saying too much.
No, man, I feel you. And it's not to disparage anyone. We just do two different things. Yeah. Like that's all it is. It's like, you wouldn't put a death metal band with a country band. Like it's just too much variety on the show. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that something about the reggae rock genre, you know, since its roots are in California, and California's roots are heavy with skateboarding and surfing and that culture and punk rock too. I mean, punk rock to me, California like was like the punk rock spot, you know? So, I mean, it was New York as well, but like, you know.
Yeah, I know. I get you.
Black Flag and that type of LA punk rock. So in that mindset, it's like, it is a lot of partying and it is like that skateboard kind of, you know, mentality, like the skate park thing. And it's not the Rasta thing and it's not the sufferation and it's not the voice of the people, but that's okay. It's whatever. That's their thing, you know, that's their culture. And I'll never say you can't do that.
No,
that's you guys.
Too. Yeah. That's beautiful too. Absolutely. Yeah.
I didn't grow up there. So it's not me.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's not better or worse than anything. It's just different. It's just different. There's just different ways of, different paths. We're all on different paths, especially in music. So you mentioned your studio, you mentioned Tall Sky Studio. Was False Reality recorded there? Was it recorded completely there? Yeah.
So everything we've done has been recorded at Tall Sky for the most part. Aside from the first record, we did some of it in Chicago, but then, like I said, it got stolen. So only little pieces were saved from backups. So I couldn't really speak to like what song was recorded in Chicago, But yeah, this new record, entirely self-produced, self-mixed. I had somebody else master it.
Yeah, I always do that too, man. I'll do everything on an album except master it. It's mastering engineers are a different breed, and I'm not going to pretend that I can master it. There's no way. Nope.
I know some guys that do both, and they get good results, but I like to have another set of ears on it, and I want my mastering engineer to be like, oh, you know, the bass is a little too heavy, or this one part is sticking out, and then I'll fix it. But
yeah.
And I'll say this though, moving forward, I don't think I want to do everything like I did, because I don't get to focus on playing and singing. I have to like think about everybody else. You know, is everybody else comfortable while we're tracking? Is everything else happening? So moving forward, I'd like to either work with a producer, like somebody, you know, if somebody sends me tracks, like a produced song, and all I got to do is write lyrics to it, I love it. I love doing that. You know, that just makes me focus on that.
Yeah.
But I would also be down to like take my full unit to somebody's studio and spend a day and just play live. Because that's one thing that I feel like is missing a little bit from this album. Like, we do play live, but it's kind of in chunks, you know, or like the horn section came in later, or we did drum and bass together, but guitars we did later. But I'd really like to do a record where we're all playing, you know, and we use most of those takes. We don't do a lot of overdubbing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'd love to do that too. Yeah. I'd love to do that too, man. It's never, you know, we've cut basic tracks live, you know, and things like that. When you can, but sometimes that stuff's a logistical nightmare, and you got to do what you got to do to get the album recorded. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's
when you're on your own, it's harder.
Yeah, man. Yeah. But it's definitely, I mean, that's the way music's supposed to be made. You know, a bunch of guys standing around in a circle jamming, and it would be cool to see a big return to that with all the bedroom studios that there are all over the place. It'd be cool to see bands getting back to playing more live. But you need a big enough room to do that in too, man. Yeah. Not everyone has a big enough room to do that. So it's definitely a challenge. But yeah, man, I'd love to hear you guys do that sometime, because that's just, you know, that's just the best. Can we talk about a few of the tunes on the new album?
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I want to talk, let's start off with Reggae on the Rise, which also has a really cool video, man. I love that. I love the video. So if you will, man, just take a couple minutes, tell me about the origins of this tune and throw in a few words about the video.
Sure. So it's funny, this song was actually supposed to be on the previous record on Same Situation. And we have a demo, an old version of it, you know, where we use the samples from the original song, because it's basically like a rendition of a Horace Andy tune. I forgot the name of it now. My Guiding Star. So if you listen to Horace Andy, My Guiding Star, you'll hear the horns. Bump, ba-bum, ba-ba-bum, ba-bum. And there's a King Tubby dub that we originally sampled the horns from. But moving into this record, we didn't want to use any samples, so we recreated everything that you hear on the album is us playing it. And yeah, basically the concept for that song was kind of what we're talking about with in the previous question, where like reggae's on the rise. We feel like it's getting more popular, like these bands are selling out arenas and like it's making more money. Yeah. But are we losing our way with the original message? And, you know, are we trying to lift people up still? What are we trying to do with this music? It's kind of the question inside of it. And Jeremy, it's his song. He wrote the lyrics. He's saying like where he's standing and what the music does for him, how it, like, he talks about the first time he heard the one drop and stuff like that in the song. And so I hope people can relate to that, you know, and it's kind of like touching on a lot of the stuff, you know, we talked about already.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the video, we went to Jamaica to shoot the video. We worked with Philip McFarlane from Earthcry. Do you know that band?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome band. Probably my favorite Jamaican band that's actually touring and putting out music right now. Yeah, so he shot it for us, and it was funny because we did it in 2020, February.
Oh, wow.
So when we were in Jamaica, we heard these reports about COVID and about this stuff. And then we were like, damn, are we going to get stuck here? And then right when we got back, it was kind of funny because I had spent like all of my money in Jamaica. I was coming back with like $100. Like, yeah, but I kind of do this every year where I would go to Jamaica and then come back and then work South by Southwest in Austin and make, you know, we always make a few thousand dollars in South by because it's just a crazy time. Mm-hmm. But 2020 came back and like a week before South By, COVID happened and everything got shut down. So I was just broke as hell for the beginning of COVID. That was rough. That was very rough. But, you know, it was an amazing experience being down in Jamaica right before that stuff happened, because the world is different now. You know, I haven't been back since. And I know that they had to do all these shutdowns and crazy rules, really weird stuff. So I don't know. I don't know how different everything is, but it was such a joy and it was such a nice experience to be down there and to put the work in. And, you know, that's the visuals that I wanted. I just wanted to show people what we got to experience.
And you did, man. It's beautiful. So let's talk about another song. Speaking of moving from Chicago to Texas, let's talk about Better Weather.
Yeah, exactly. So Better Weather, dude, it's funny. Like a lot of these songs, they were written in 2012 or like 2013. We wrote, when we first started, we wrote a lot of stuff, and then we didn't have the means to record it. Like we just didn't have the studio, didn't have the money to put it out. Cause I mean, as you know, mastering and all this stuff costs money.
Yeah, it does. So
as an independent artist, it costs a lot to put a record out. So you can't just like, people are like, why don't you put out more music? I was like, why don't you send me $100?
You know, in music, you know, what everyone calls content now, like that costs money to make. Like this is not a 30-second TikTok. Like this stuff costs dough.
Exactly. And that's something I'm wrapping my head around now too, is like, I put so much effort into my content. I'm not really used to making short videos every day that don't sound that good.
Yeah.
But people like that. Anyway, to get back to the question, this song was written a long time ago, and we were feeling the whole thing with the weather in Chicago about dreaming of better weather, dreaming of the islands, dreaming of other places. And it's a love song too. So it's, you know, essentially saying like, I can't wait to take you to better weather so we can be together. And I don't know, Jeremy wrote that whole tune and wrote the horn line, and I just kind of changed up the bass line and put a feel to it. And there is an early demo of it too. I was thinking about maybe in a year from now or a couple of months, I'll release those demos that were the precursor to what you're hearing on the album now. Cause they've come a long way.
Yeah. Cool. That'll be fun, man. That's like, I geek out on that stuff. I always love hearing origins and, you know, all that stuff. So I always like hearing demo versions of stuff to hear how different things are. You know,
Me too.
That's always fun.
Some dubs too. I got dubs for most of the songs that I haven't released yet. So maybe I'll put out, the lost tapes or something.
I did a thing. I did a little dub EP, because what I'll usually do from our albums is take like three or four tunes from each that I feel that feel like
strong
they lend themselves well to dub. You know what I mean? Not every tune lends itself well to a dub feel, to a dub version.
True.
And then I'll do like an EP. Like we did an EP that was just kind of like, it's like a private fan giveaway type of thing. Like it's not out there for release, but it's like, you know, kind of a thank you to the fans. And it's like a seven of dub versions and stuff. So I always love hearing that too. Dub versions, demos, like whatever, like I'll listen to all of it. I love that you can take a tune and just make different things from it, you know, which is the blessing of dub that never really happened in any other style of music.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I guess people just took dub and made EDM eventually. Dubstep and all that.
Yeah, I guess they did.
For real. Drum and bass and dubstep and all that. Yeah. It came from dub. I mean, we kind of have to make different versions these days. And I've never got a song placed in like a film or TV, but it seems like for film and TV, they want as many versions of it as they can get. Like,
yeah, especially instrumental versions, and you know, and they want all your stems and stuff out there. Yeah. Yeah.
So you might as well throw the dub in there too. I mean, you might as well give them all of the versions.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's like seven different versions of this tune. Have fun with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that, you know, I've had a few friends tell me, they were like, I listened to the vinyl and I could just hear it in a movie. And I was like, I hope too, man. I hope somebody put it in a movie.
I hope someone else hears that. I think I sold a tune one time to like an app in Vietnam. And that was like the highlight of my sync licensing, is that some app in Vietnam paid me a few bucks to use one of the tunes. And it's like,
did they find you?
That's cool. I think I had it on SongTrader or something like that. You know, you throw your tunes out there and you're like, if anybody hears it, whatever. Cause I don't,
yeah.
I don't actively go after sync licensing. It's just whatever yeah. the deals I already have, the distributors, whoever distributes, yeah. if someone hears something cool, but I don't actively go after that. Cause that's a whole other career is it trying is. To, trying to chase that down, you know? So, yeah. But yeah, man, an app in Vietnam got a few bucks from that. So that's
cool.
That's my big victory.
And you never know, bro. You might have some fans in Vietnam. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You might not, you could go over there and play Vietnam.
It's funny, man. It's like, have you ever looked at your demographics from around the world, like to see who's playing your, that's always fun for me. Cause it's like, wow. It's like, you know, there's like a few dudes in Poland who are really digging this tune. And it's like, that's always cool to discover those things because you don't see that in your day to day. You don't know who you're reaching. And that's always like this beautiful surprise when you hear stuff like that.
Totally. Totally. I mean, There's a documentary, I think it was called Finding Sugar Man. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, man. I saw that a few years back. That was incredible. Yeah.
Where he's like, everyone thought this guy was dead.
Yeah.
But he's like a huge star in South Africa.
South Africa, yeah.
Bro, I was like, wow, I can only wish that happens to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? You have like a career later in life that just took off. It's nuts.
It's just the whole thing's magic. You know, it's all magical about, you know, you never know. Someone's going to hear something and then, you know, the whole game changes for you. Let's talk about the title track, man, False Reality. Tell me the origin of that tune.
So False Reality, I just wrote a verse, like stream of consciousness, sitting down 10 minutes. I wrote that first verse when Ferguson happened in 2014. When all that mayhem started to go down, and I was just looking at like the false reality of it all, just like how they were lying and saying a bunch of shit, you know, about who about actors and people that were doing all the destroying when there was other forces doing it. And the media was clearly trying to manipulate people. And there was just so much stupidness happening and has continued up until, you know, look at what happened in 2020 and all the, and I use the word fake news, but not to use it in like a Donald Trump way, but like, you know, but it's true. Like, and this is not a new thing. The media and the forces out there have been manipulating us for a long time. You know, read between the lines.
Sure.
The whole movie They Live is about that.
Yeah.
From the 80s. So
best fight scene ever. Best fight scene. And Keith David's like my favorite actor. So, you know, I love that movie.
So I'll have to send you, Lionheights made a movie that we only sent to our email list, and I'll send it to you. If you know They Live.
I know They Live very well. Very
you'll
well.
Like this movie.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Yeah. Eventually we'll put it on YouTube, but you know, but anyway, so yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not a new concept. I think most people that are kind of in the underground fully know what I'm talking about, you know, and especially with the phones now, the phones is like a whole new thing where it's like, it's brainwashing us all the time. And you can look at how long you spend on your phone. And some people be spending 10 hours a day on their phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane. And look at how Facebook and social media has radicalized people and caused genocide.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And so anyway, all of that is a little bit deeper than what the song is saying, but like the song, I just trying to touch on it as much as I can.
Yeah.
So I just wrote that verse, stream of consciousness. And then I showed it to my buddy and he was like, I like that false reality line. I like that. Cause it was in the verse. Mm. He's like, you should make that the chorus. And so then I was like, okay. And I started messing around and making it the chorus. But yeah, like I made that rhythm in 2014 when I was touring with a rock band called the Tauntauns. And all, like I said, all this music has been sitting on the hard drive for like years and years and years. It just takes forever to put it all together by yourself. So
it does, man. It takes a long time. It really does. Like we, like the album I'm working on, we actually recorded drum tracks almost 2 years ago now, but then I moved and then we had a hurricane 6 months ago and it's like everything gets pushed back. And it's like, I know by the time this thing's done, it'll be, you know, easily 2.5-3 years since, but it takes time, man. But you also want to get it right. So it's like, you don't want to rush anything out there. So you got this album out, False Reality, and you're setting off on a tour pretty soon, man. It's pretty soon.
Yeah.
Talk about the tour.
Yeah. So, it's kind of, you know, it's funny. I didn't even realize this, but people have been posting like, oh, it's a brewery tour. And I guess most of the places we're playing are breweries. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going all the way up to Yakima, Washington is the first show. And then we're, you know, doing Bend and Springfield. And then we're going to go down the coast and do some California down to San Diego and then cut back across Arizona. We'll touch a little bit of Colorado. We're going to play Durango. And I think Rise and Vibe Festival is happening the same exact time that we're there. Mm. So if any listeners are going to that fest, you can see us in Durango on Friday for free, which will be kind of cool. And we're playing kind of early. It's like an outside vibe.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, and then we come back home. So we do the West Coast. We try to do it twice a year and trying to build out the followers that we have out there just because I feel like that is where most of the listenership is for reggae music, you know? But yeah, again, it's very competitive. There's a lot of other bands and it's really hard to get bookings because we're independent. We don't have a booking agent. It's just us emailing places and using our connects with other bands.
Right.
So yeah, that's, I mean, and what ends up being is like breweries are the ones that have a budget to pay you. So thankfully, they're willing to take a chance on us, not really knowing us, but pay us a good guarantee so we can make it work.
Yeah. Breweries are great. They're great places for bands. They're really great. Yeah. It's really, I can't say enough about them. They're very supportive. It's not, you know, yeah, they've got the money, but they're also very supportive of bands they've never heard of, you know, where, you know, clubs and bars often are not. So I definitely, breweries are a great place to be on the itinerary when you're out there playing. We didn't touch on Dangerous Sound, man. I meant to mention that earlier. So in addition to Lion Heights, in addition to you having Tall Sky Studio, you've got a sound system, Dangerous Sound. How did that come about?
For sure. I feel like somebody who like spreads themselves real thin and doesn't really get like, I'm not a master of any of these things, but I do like a bunch of different stuff. So the Dangerous Sound thing started in Chicago. I was DJing, just learning to DJ and just mainly because I wanted to play my productions, you know, and get them out to the people. But for years I've been cutting dub plates because I get hired to play bass for artists quite often. And Lion Heights has backed, you know, a lot of artists. Mm-hmm. And when we get to be face to face with them, I'll try to cut a dub plate for Dangerous Sound. And for those that don't know, a dub plate is like a custom song. So say, you know, I don't know, Luton Faya has a big song. I will have him re-sing that same song, but include my sound system's name in it. Or if you want to have a killing sound, I could have him sing about he's going to kill someone else's sound. Like if I'm in a clash against somebody else, because sound system is actually a competitive sport, which people don't really understand that. So, but my sound is not really a killing sound. I'm not very aggressive like that because it costs a lot of money. So my thing is just like a party vibe. And I want to, my main goal with Dangerous Sound is to spread the culture, you know, and be someone who facilitates the culture or is like an ambassador in Texas for this. We string up every Sunday here in Austin at Winston's Kitchen, the Jamaican food truck. And we play all vinyl every Sunday. I mean, if other DJs want to come and bring a controller, they can do that. But I play vinyl. Nice. Dude, it's such a fun party. And we just play dominoes and hang out and smoke. And it's like from around 4 p.m. to about 10, nice. You know, every Sunday. And I used to throw like dance hall parties like late in the night. Like these parties would start at midnight and go till 6 a.m. But that was pre-pandemic. Since the pandemic, it's been kind of harder to do the after hours. So
things have changed. Things have changed. Even before the pandemic, I saw things changing where like people don't go out as late as they used to. It's and there's still clubs that aren't starting shows until 10 o'clock. And it's like, man, some people are wrapping up by 10 o'clock these days. Like,
Flamingo,
you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Where I work, Flamingo Cantina on 6th Street is the reggae bar in Austin. Yeah. We start our bands at 10:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we go till 1:30. And it's really tough sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been tough to get people to stay out. I've really noticed, you know, we might have to shift our thing to have some earlier shows.
Yeah. Well, it's so, like where you played with us at the Jazz House in Lawrence, they do the same thing. Like the first, like they'll do an early band, which is usually like a tribute band or a cover band, and they'll go 7 to 10. And then the you know, the original band, they don't start until like 10:30. And it's like, I watched the audiences over the years at that place just slowly go down. It's like, people just don't stay out. Like, they don't go out on a lot of weeknights like everybody used to. They don't stay out late like everyone used to. It's just kind of a shifting culture of live music. And then, you know, I'll go out to see touring bands at some venues, and it's like, they'll go on at like 8 o'clock, and it's like, wow, the headliner's going on at 8. Like, yeah. So it's like some people are kind of compensating for it. Other people are still holding out, and, you know, only time will tell which way it goes.
Well, I'm sure both of us try to watch a lot of these trends and stuff. And I see those Cali bands do that. They play early, early shows.
Yeah.
Like, the whole show will be done by 11, you know, and they play a lot of these outdoor venues here that have the sound ordinances that they have to be done by 11 or 12. So, like, that's kind of what I assumed. But it's probably also because they can get a lot more ticket sales because they know they can have the older crowd come, because the older crowd doesn't want to be out late. And then, and the thing about the young people, about Gen Z and the generation after that, I wonder, are they really supporting live music? I kind of don't see them, especially in the reggae scene. I don't see them as much, the real young people, because those would be the people that stay out late. You know, they're going to shut down the bar till 2 a.m.
Right. And I'm not sure that they do. It might just be part of that generation's culture that they're not growing up going out, really. They're growing up with Netflix. Like, I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, when I was younger, we went out because we had to. Like,
it was boring.
Yeah.
Staying home was boring.
I didn't have hundreds of movies at my fingertips and be able to sit on the couch. Like, we went out because we had to, you know? So it could just be part of the culture too, but you're right. As an artist, you have to pay attention to that, and you have to make moves accordingly. And knowing who your audience is, how late they really want to be out, you know, is everybody in your demographic need to pay for babysitters and stuff? It's like, these are things that we have to consider before we book at certain venues, before we decide on start times, all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah.
I feel like we have an older crowd, you know, I think our crowd has always been a little bit older than us in the band. And I've also seen that in like reggae scenes, like the Chicago scene and the Austin scene both had a lot of older people in it. And now that I've been in it for 10 plus years, I saw a lot of those people disappear. You know, they either got too old, they had kids, people died. A lot of people died over the COVID thing, you know, and crucial people in our scene have died. And since those people have gone, even their followings, the people that supported them, they're not showing up to support the club anymore or the bands or anymore. So I'm just like, and then I'm not seeing the new people take their place. I'm a little worried about it, you know, about reggae music as a whole and about live music as a whole.
Yeah.
And it might just be something that changes. And, you know, what I've heard from a few friends is that, like, they no longer are really interested in playing bars that are associated with having to sell alcohol or ticket sales, but would rather play a private event, maybe at a home or something where, you know, you only got 20 to 50 people, but you curate an experience that's like, that you don't forget, you know.
Like, house concerts are the jam. That's something else that cooled off a little bit during COVID, but I was really getting into that right before COVID. And yeah, man, no, you're absolutely right. And bands can make more money that way because it's a beautiful experience for everyone involved, and you're not relying on some shady club owner to.
There's no middleman.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like curating it yourself, and you can also, I feel like, maybe connect with the people better, which at the end of the day, that's what this is about, is like connecting with people, you know. Yeah. All the other things are just, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what live music is about. You're 100% right, man. Live music is about connecting with people. If no one wanted that, we could all sit home and play the album. We go out and we play, or we go out and we watch other bands play because we want that experience, man. So
yeah, and
right on.
I don't know if I don't think live music will disappear, but it does seem like music is shifting in like the way that people connect with it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that means or what we should be doing, but yeah, I'm just noticing like, it's not the world we grew up in for sure.
Right.
So let's stop pretending it is. And because I kind of beat my head into the wall, like, this is what bands are supposed to do. And it's like, well, that was the old world. Like now we have to create and figure out what we're supposed to do and lead the way and, you know, be innovative.
Yeah. And good on you, man, for realizing that, knowing that, because there's a lot of bands that I talk to. It's like, you're still kind of doing things the old way, and it's not like you have to make drastic changes, but you have to be able to ride the waves, and you have to be able to shift your focus when it's time to do that, you know? So I'm glad to see that you guys are doing that. So Dane, I've been having a ton of fun talking to you, man. This is one of my favorite conversations I've had on here, but unfortunately all good things must come to an end. But before I do, I'm going to have to ask you two tough questions and put you on the spot about your band. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. Number one, you write, you record, you also play live. What if you could only do one? What if you could play live, but not write and record, or vice versa? What would you pick?
Well, the funny thing is write and record to me are the same or in one, because if I don't write, what am I going to record?
Fair enough.
But I mean, if I had to pick between, you know, something, I would say like recording and putting out music, I would pick that just because I feel like it's everlasting and it has the potential to reach people, you know, the entire world, where like me playing live, I could get stuck playing only in Texas and then only these people would know me. And, you know, I've never seen Bob Marley, but I know his music intimately, you know, and his music has made a huge impact on my life. So I could only wish that I also influence people positively like that. And it might not even be in my lifetime. It might be 50 years from now that people are like, yo, Lion Heights is awesome.
Yeah. That's why I told my wife, like, I'm never going to sell the publishing because, you know, who knows, maybe years from now, she might actually get a little bit of money out of that.
You never know. Never know.
But yeah, man, no, that's a beautiful answer. That's a perfect answer. So question number two, someone hasn't heard Lion Heights and they're like, well, yeah, I'll check you out. Give me one song that you think I should check out that's a fair representation of your band.
That's tough.
Yep. That's why I do it.
Yeah, because I really like us to be, when I think of reggae, I think of an umbrella that covers a lot of subgenres: dancehall, dub, roots, rocksteady, ska, all of those things. And when we say reggae, like, I like to be all of those things. I don't want to just be one roots reggae or dub or whatever. So, and in this new album, I tried to do that. Like, we have one Nyabingi tune. I have a dancehall. I have a, even, you know, False Reality, it's rootsy, but it's not as roots as some of the one drops. And, you know, with reggae music, there's different beats. You have a one drop beat, you have kick and snare, you have four on the floor, all these different beats. So I'd like them to experience that versatility. I don't know, man, one song. And then there's songs that Jeremy and I sing on, and there's songs that he just sings alone. So I would pick one of those songs, I suppose. It'd be a toss up between False Reality, just because it's a new one and it has a good message, and Same Situation on the last record, which is speaking about His Majesty and his talk to the pre-UN, you know, during pre-World War II when Mussolini was fighting. So that's what that song is about. And like, those are the things I'd like people to understand about Lion Heights, is that we're about social justice. We speak about Rastafari as well as all these other things that other people sing about as well.
All right, man. Way to work that answer out of that. I like
something.
You did a great job. Great job.
It's a hard question.
Yeah, man. Well, I always ask that of everyone, because like, it gives me insight into you, into your band. And I always like, you know, we all need calling cards. It doesn't matter what our catalog is. It's like my manager always says, she's like, you know, I always want to send people a bunch of your different songs, because none of your songs sound the same. And it's like, I know, but Like, so, like you still need to have the 1, 2, 3 tunes that you can send to people, because they're not, you know, they're not going to listen to everything if you're trying to get on a festival or booking a show or whatever, you know. So I always like that insight from bands. And, you know, it's just cool to see the way that people think about their own music and why they would consider that. And like False Reality, both tunes you named are great answers for that. So, so you did very well, man. I did very well. So, False Reality is out everywhere now. You can hear it at all of the usual places, right?
Yeah. And I would encourage people to go to our website, because we have a store there, and, you can buy the vinyl. And you can buy, like, we got sunglasses and shirts and all that stuff. And I also encourage people, when they go to the website, please sign up for our email list. And I know it sounds old and like the youth today don't deal with email as much, but I really want to take the power away from these tech companies, these social media companies that control what we're allowed to show our audience, you know? Mm-hmm. I can make a post about our new album and nobody sees it. And then I can take a picture of myself and it gets 200 likes. So it's very irritating when I spent a lot of time on the album and Facebook is hiding it.
Yeah.
You know? And so why I want to encourage all bands to have an email list and to use it is because that's peer to peer. I'm emailing you directly. I mean, it's as good as me writing a letter and sending it to your house. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's the best way. And like we said, we already established music is about connection. So let's get rid of all these people that are making money in between us and using us, exploiting us as a product. You know, this is a whole nother conversation. But anyway, the email list, I also send exclusive stuff to there. And both of us talked about how we like to do that with our bands. You know, you want to reward your fans for supporting you. And I like to give away freebies and discounts on the store. So anyway, if you're a listener and you're digging it, please go to the email list and let's take the power away from these people.
Right on, man. Right on. So give us your website, give us your socials and where everyone can get in contact with you.
Yeah. I would say lionheights.com, LionHeights.com. That's the best way. And then if you just, you know, search Lion Heights and Facebook, Instagram, any of the other ones, we're the first one that pops up. So, and you know, I mentioned it earlier, booking agents look at those vanity numbers, Spotify monthly listeners and stuff. So if you want to support us and do it for free, that's the easiest way to do it, is just follow us across everything, because it really does help. And it's frustrating that it does, but
right on. It does help. Right on. So get out and support Lion Heights and go to their website. You can see all their upcoming tour dates, and definitely go and get False Reality and hear what this band is doing. Dane, thanks so much, man. It's been great having you on here, and we definitely got to do it again sometime, man.
Of course, I would love to. Thank you, man. And anytime you're in Austin, bro, or you want to come to Texas, I'm just a phone call away.
Thanks, man. The last time I was there, I did a solo tour, and I played a show down in Austin, and then like 2 months later was when the pandemic happened. So last time I was in Austin was like December 2019, I guess, was the last time I was there. Yeah. And I love Austin, man. It's a great town. So, yeah, man, keep in touch and we'll talk soon, brother.
All right, brother. Respect.
That sounded good.